America, and to all of our listeners all over the world, you're listening to yet another episode of Let's Weekend. I am, of course, in your host with the most, Brandon Perkins. Joining me, as always, is Filippo D'Onofrio, Patrick Mifflin, and Chris Sologi. Say hi, everybody.
Hello.
Hey.
Hello.
Yeah, so a couple of things happened this week. First of all, WorldWarriors.net is now officially live.
Yes.
So go check that out. Phil's Pat's been working real hard on it, and Phil, to a certain extent, also helping to build the site.
He's been tremendous.
Yeah. So go over there for all your competitive fighting game needs. There's just a shit ton of amazing information you can dive into. Will it completely suck up all the hours of your day? Possibly. Probably.
We can only hope.
Yeah.
We're counting on it, basically. Mm. But other than that, well, this episode, of course, is for April 6, 2018. Down here in the South, asshole winter has officially left us. It is now definitely spring.
No, you still got drunk asshole winter, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, asshole winter has taken up residence up here.
Yeah. But that's Canada.
Yeah.
Like, it's like half the year is winter.
Oh. Yeah, pretty much.
But other than all that, well, we got a certain, in the anime world, we lost someone really important. We'll get to him later. The fallout from assholes responding to the Parkland shooting just keeps coming, and they just keep burying themselves. There's consequences to that shit. We'll be getting to it later. We also now know that we're definitely going to be getting watched by the DHS anytime now. We'll explain why, but but in just in case, hello, President Trump. I hope you die. Now we're definitely on it. Also, we got some science stuff. We now know about a new project Jordan Peele's working on. Russell Crowe is kind of having a fire sale. Everything must go, apparently. But anyway, before we get to all that, Phil, what have you been up to this week?
So I finally finished Battlefield Earth.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a long book.
Yeah, it's a long-ass book.
So after that, I've just kind of been just working on site stuff because, you know, it was the last week. Wanted to get everything up to scratch. Got all the feeds, work filters looking and working right, as much as I can. I started building the metadata, so I've got to be putting that up probably over the weekend, be able to get that going. And then I got to start building the Game Hub template, so that's going to be fun. That's going to be a very useful tool to have once we get that up, because be able to link directly to specific things, you know, stuff that if you're looking to learn a certain game, this is the stuff you should know type thing. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So I'm working on that, and
it's going to help the site run a lot more seamlessly.
Yeah. So more to do. And apart from that, let's see. I watched The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, which wasn't as bad a movie adaptation as I thought it was going to be.
Which movie adaptation? The most recent one?
Yeah, the 2005 one.
Ah.
Yeah, I expected it to suck completely, and it was kind of enjoyable. So, all right. And that's kind of been pretty much it for me. So how about you, Pat?
My week has pretty much been dominated by a combination of the World Warriors launch and getting sick again. So that happened. Other than that, I am currently in the process of cataloging Tekken 7 at NorCal Strong Style 6 and dealing with some situations I didn't even really consider that I would face when putting together the video library, and it's really making me wonder what constitutes a taggable match, because they did this thing called the jump off where they were just constantly going from one match to another, even in progress. And that has been the bane of my existence. There is content in those matches that are absolutely worth cataloging, but I'm not sure where I draw the line between a taggable match and a non-taggable match.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm going to have to make some judgment calls as I go through all these reels of matches, because we need more Tekken 7 in the library, obviously. I mean, that's it is a featured game at just about every event going on these days, and we have hardly any of it right now. So I have to make what I can of it, but it's going to be really interesting going through that whole process. So awesome. We'll see what happens.
All right. Chris, what about you?
So I finished the Flash Season 3.
All right.
The battle against Savitar, which actually went pretty well. The season ends in a pretty interesting way that makes me look forward to Season 4. But yeah, they do some neat stuff with like the last 6 to 8 episodes, something like that. There's a musical episode, actually, which is when I found out that The Flash and Supergirl were both in Glee for a few years.
Yeah.
So that was weird. And the main villain in that episode is the Musical Meister, or the Music Meister, who I guess started in, what was it, Batman Brave and the Bold? That was sort of his origin. He sort of comes in and puts the two of them into comas, and they're together in like a shared consciousness where they have to like just follow the musical script as a means of getting out. It's a pretty weird episode. But yeah, they do some pretty neat stuff with this season, especially some of the later stuff, and the reveal of who Savitar is pretty neat. But yeah, I'm looking forward to getting to Season 4 in a bit. As for games, I started A Hat in Time. I got that on sale recently.
I've heard good things about that game.
Yeah, it's pretty good. I would say it's like, hey, what if an indie team took some of the cool stuff about Super Mario Sunshine and made a good game out of it? So yeah, there's no flood mechanic, at least not that I've seen so far. The structure is kind of similar in that you have, not too many levels in it, but in each of the levels you take on different missions that sort of changes up the levels in various ways. The first level is Mafia Town, which is pretty funny. It's like stereotypical mafia dudes are just took over this island.
Yep.
And whenever you get to talk to them, there's like, oh, typical like Russian mafia kind of accent, and just making dumb stereotypical jokes that are pretty good. Yeah, I've had one that was where they turned on all the faucets in town, these big giant faucets that were connected to the volcano. So it's just lava on the ground all over the place. and so you have to go around and turn them off to save the town. Yeah, there's lots of nice little funny stuff in there. One of the weird things is that the sort of, I don't know if she's an antagonist yet or not, but there's this girl that you meet early on who is kind of looks like Red Riding Hood, I guess. But she also has a mustache. It's a little bit of a weird thing. She has blonde.
Yeah, really?
It's like a weird blonde mustache on her as well. I was thinking maybe it's just like weird thing with the bangs, but no, it's like an actual mustache.
Yeah.
But it's, yeah, so they have that sort of thing where, you know, you're not just playing one level and going to the next. It's kind of taking on different missions in the same level. So there's like that first one. I've also had like a nighttime level where it's raining, which involves you running into this goop that sort of coats you. And you use that to scare the mafia guys because they think you're an alien. has come down to, I don't know, eat their brains or something like that. And so you run up on them and they just run away. They're scared shitless. But yeah, like control-wise, it has that weird dive jump move that Super Mario Sunshine had. And it has double jumps. It has just some good wall running, wall jump stuff as well. And it just controls really well, which is not a thing that Super Mario Sunshine did. They kind of made things a little too complex in that game, but here it works pretty well. You collect, you're collecting ultimately these time vials, I guess, that I guess have some means of controlling time or something like that. Some way of affecting time, but, yeah, like the weird thing, the whole beginning of the game is one of the mafia guys somehow shows up on your spaceship.
Mm-hmm.
It's out in space, and I don't think you're on Earth because you get like artifacts for Earth. But the mafia is like, you are in space, and we get the money from anybody around our territory, so give us the money. And basically trying to strong arm you into paying them off for protection or whatever. Which he busts through the glass door, which doesn't really make any sense. But breaks it, and all of your like time pieces gets sucked out of the vault and onto this planet. And so that's kind of the ultimate thing you're doing in each of the levels is getting that, which is kind of the shine for
mm-hmm.
Mario had. But there are also these like currency gems that you get, which you spend on badges. Which sort of give you little gameplay tweaks. I have two on mine right now. One gives me, it sucks in the gems, so it gives you a little bit of a suction on them. So if you're near them, they'll start pulling towards you. And the other one, I forget what it, oh yeah, it, when I go for, take like a long drop, she'll pull out her umbrella to slow her descent. Hmm. So you don't lose, a life or, a heart on long drops. But the hats are also a big thing. So you buy hats with the yarn you find around the level. And those change your gameplay pretty big. The first one you get is a sprint hat, which lets you obviously sprint around. The second one I've gotten is a... I guess it's kind of like a bomb hat. It's more like chemical stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But you use it to blow up these glowing crates that have more currency or hearts in them or whatever.
Yeah.
And that's how you get a lot of the currency. But yeah, the weird guy you buy the badges from is like a glitcher.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to buy one more. It's like 1,000 gems for it, which you can just run around the levels and just grab all of them every time you're in one of the missions
yeah.
you want, but you don't have to if you don't want to.
Mm.
But yeah, it's kind of fun enough to get around that it's fun to just collect that stuff, mm-hmm. which is always good for a platformer. I've also been playing Burnout Paradise some more, doing some more of the achievement stuff. I found all the events, which I didn't get the achievements to unlock for like 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Just like a weird, stupid delay in that stuff.
Yeah.
I also hopped online to do some of the Freeburn challenges, which that can be a real drag when people... The game doesn't necessarily switch between them too well. It can sometimes just wait forever if the host isn't just forcing it to change over. But then you also, if you get matched into games with idiots that aren't paying attention, it's a real drag.
Mm.
I had one where I needed to get a chain of 5 near misses on the highway. And there's like 2 guys that are just fucking around in some parts of the map that and not doing what they're supposed to. Like 10 minutes later, like still waiting on them to do it. Eventually they quit and we got it by default. But yeah, it's making me think I should just start my own instance and then, you know, manage that myself. because I want the challenges, and people got to jump in to help me out. That'd be more interesting than just hopping into random matches and hoping they're going to do the stuff that I haven't done yet. But yeah, that's still been a lot of fun to do. I started up Kingdom New Lands, which was one of the new games added this month on Game Pass, which I wasn't sure what it was before I started, but it's actually kind of an interesting strategy game. So it's all kind of side-scrolling. You're controlling a king on a horse who just basically has a bag of gold, uses that to hire people to join his kingdom. And you go to these merchants to buy up like a hammer for their to turn them into a builder, so you can build up defenses, or have them tear down trees and other stuff so you can expand your kingdom out further. Or you can get bows so they can become archers and take down rabbits and deer and enemies that will attack your fences. And so it's kind of trying to figure out the best strategies for surviving and even be able to survive just small issues. If you feel like fences don't do well protecting your guys, they will get hit and by the enemies and will lose. Like initially they lose their whatever their item they're holding. So they lose their class, and then the next time they get hit, they lose the gold that you used to hire them. So then they become these like weird homeless people that just wander around the map. It's kind of weird. And they congregate at these camps. But if you get to a certain point, like I did in my second run, there's like one camp all the way on the left. And so then these guys don't really have anywhere to really go, so they're just kind of wandering around. And my two runs have kind of ended at a point where I didn't have any more gold, and those guys were getting losing their status as like a builder or a archer or whatever. And so it was like either I was going to have to do some boring grinding or just have to kind of quit and restart. But yeah, I'm still working on that, but it's a nice game to just kind of play casually and have a podcast on and just chill and kind of figure out better strategies for each run. So far the runs have been like less than an hour, so not too bad. But I'm looking forward to put some more time into that, because I think the main goal of each of the new lands that you get to is there's this like framework of a ship that you need to rebuild, and that gets you to the next land. Then something happens, I guess, and you have to start all over again. But yeah, it's pretty good. It's not what I was expecting, but it's a pretty neat sort of take on the strategy genre. And the other game I've been playing a bit is Xenoraid. That's the episode of 10 Tons of Switch for this week is Xenoraid, which is a big departure in terms of their other shooters. It's not a dual-stick shooter like their other games. It's actually kind of like a weird Galaga kind of clone. Not really clone so much as it's single screen. You have a ship, and enemies will come down. There's like a set amount of enemies for each mission, and they will sort of come down in formations. Not necessarily in the same way that Galaga does it. It's just more like you have a set amount of enemies to take out of different types, and they'll just come down from the top and try and shoot you and all that. The one interesting thing it does is that each of the face buttons switches to a new ship. And so those can have different... they can be different kind of ships. So like in the first set of missions, you'll have two different types of ships. One that has more of a spread shot, one that has more of a, just more of a single shot kind of thing. And so you have two of each. And so it gives you just depth of, oh, I fucked up here and this guy's almost dead. I'll switch over to the fresh guy and just continue on. And after each mission, you can upgrade them. They have like three or four upgrades they can do. They'll be like, you know, higher fire rates or better defenses or something like that.
Yeah.
But if they die during a mission, they're dead. You have to hire a new pilot and new ship and all that. Once you get to the second round, you have a different type for all four slots. So you have those same two slots, and then the other two is a grenade launcher guy,
mm-hmm.
and then a flamethrower ship, which is actually pretty neat because it's a pretty long flame, and so you just have to, you know, essentially paint the enemies, and they will eventually die if they stay on the screen for long enough. Then you get to points where you fight bigger ships that take more damage, are much easier to kill you and all that sort of stuff. And you try and just get these good runs and hopefully not fuck up too much and lose all your ships. Yeah, it's pretty neat for what it is. I might play a bit more of that, but it's nice to see them doing something a little bit different. And they just announced their next game that they're working on, which is called Undead Horde, which is an action RPG where you're a necromancer. So you're raising undead hordes to fight for you.
Hmm.
And it seems kind of a similar top-down style to their dual stick shooters, but it's going to be more of an action RPG, which is a pretty nice change of pace to see for that.
Yep.
Yeah, that's been kind of it, just shitty weather all week.
Yeah.
2 days of snow, 1 day of rainstorms all day. That's one day where it got up to about 60.
Yeah.
But shitty enough weather, nobody wanted to be out in it.
Yeah.
I think Wednesday, it was like 30 to 40 mile an hour winds all day. And a little bit of snow there. So, yeah, that's real fun to be out in. Especially because there were certain points where I was actually kind of getting physically affected by it. Like, just getting tons of cold wind blowing right in my face. To the point where it started feeling like I had a headache. So it's just that kind of pain to the front, to like your forehead, like a headache. It's like that kind of pain, just getting it. I was like, this is annoying. Also had a bit where the wind was kind of just blowing as I was walking just the right way where I started feeling like I was dizzy. Like you don't have a great feel for walking. It's like, this wind sucks. Just making me feel like shit, but, yeah. Hopefully we're getting to the point where it's going to start warming up, but that hasn't happened yet.
All right.
How about you, Brandon?
All right. Well, first things first, I finished Breath of the Wild.
Congrats.
It's done. I got all the divine beasts. I got the Master Sword. I defeated Ganon. Then I did the Champion's Ballad, and I'm done. So... I went to GameStop and I picked up Ni No Kuni 2.
Yeah, that came out this week. What was it last week?
Yeah, it was last.
Yeah.
And it's good. It's actually really good. They don't have like the... I don't remember. Hey, how many? Did any of you guys play the original Ni No Kuni?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, they don't have, like, the anime cutscenes in this one. It's all, like, regular. Yeah, in engine. But that's fine, because the engine looks gorgeous. So, they've changed up the gameplay, too. So, instead of, like, the whole sort of faux Pokemon thing you were doing in the first game... they've changed it up to a bit more of a standard action RPG type gameplay, but they've got some additional twerks that they've added. So, like, one of the things in this game that you come across are these little creatures called Higgledies, and they're basically this game's version of the little spirit goblin things from Princess Mononoke. You know, the things that turn their heads and go...
Yeah.
Those things?
Yeah.
Yeah. And they all come in different elements, and when you get into a battle, they'll all group up and they'll all have like different strategic uses you can have for them. So like one of them, like the standard ones, they'll all group up, and when you activate them, they'll like materialize a cannon out of thin air and help you in battle. There's another one that can like help you with like freezing or health, like it can heal. There's the ones that are based around dark matter that can like have this big like dark matter explosion that can take a big chunk off of your enemy. And that's like the standard battle. But there's also the battlefield mode, which is kind of like you've got like you have like four different armies that you can surround yourself with, and it takes place in the overworld. And you use the different armies to take off like different other opposing armies, get through their walls and stuff. It's kind of like somebody kind of compared it. It's kind of like Suikoden a little bit, but like an action RPG version of Suikoden. It's really neat. It's a lot of fun. I'm genuinely enjoying it. And the game, it is in fact a continuation of the first game. It just takes place like hundreds and hundreds of years after the first game. So like what happened in the previous game is kind of like become like myth and legend. Also, the game starts in just a hell of a... I'm not going to spoil it because, I mean, just like with the first Ni No Kuni, you're essentially playing a person from what is ostensibly our world, drawn into the other world, except you don't play a little boy, you play an adult this time, and the adult kind of acts as more like a deuter protagonist than the actual protagonist, but his whole entrance into the game is like a fucking, well, you'll have to see it for yourself. It's just, let's just say that is one hell of a way to get this game started. But other than that, I've been reading. I've talked a bunch about Charles Soule, who's like my favorite writer in the business, in the comic book business right now. Well, he released his first novel this week. It came out this week. It's called The Oracle Year. It's basically about this dude who wakes up one day with like 108 prophecies of the future in his head. And so he decides to start this website that he puts out that people just call The Site. And once people start started to see that all these prophecies on the site start coming true, he starts making enemies of a televangelist, the president of the United States, various corporate and world leaders. It's good, clean fun. And finally, been enjoying more Netflix stuff. I've started watching My Witch Academia. I don't know if any of you guys have heard of that. That's the from Studio Trigger, people that brought you Kill la Kill.
That sounds good. Like an anime name.
Yeah. It's actually pretty good. I won't lie. It's legit funny at times, too. But it's kind of what it says on the tin. It's about a little witch girl who goes to witch school. And hilarity ensues. Yeah. So, yeah, that's pretty much been my week. So anybody got anything that they want to add before we move on?
Nope, I'm good.
Nope? Alrighty then. Well, I guess it's now time to move on to everybody's favorite part of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. And I'm going to go ahead and warn everyone now. What I'm about to talk about is basically a lot of what I talked about on Day Zero Update last week. Or I guess this week, if you count Sunday as the first day of the week. You weird European people. But shout out to all of our listeners in Europe.
Yeah, we're getting good at that.
Yeah. That's just going to be a new thing at this point. But basically, okay, so if you know what I'm talking about, you can just kind of go ahead and fast forward a bit. But because I couldn't get enough of talking about this shit on Day Zero, because I'm just absolutely gobsmacked that this game exists, here we go. So And I obviously, you guys probably already have an idea what I'm going to be talking about, but just because the fact that it exists is just enough to talk about it more than once, I think. All right, so the original Street Fighter came out way back in the late 80s, and especially compared to Street Fighter 2, it is very like a prototype. It is a very much a prototype experience. Like, it's almost like the first Street Fighter was basically just a prototype for Street Fighter 2. Because of how completely like apples and oranges as far as the quality is concerned.
Yep.
Like the amount of just like, holy shit, this game is so much better than its predecessor. It's not even funny. But that being said, the original Street Fighter, with all of its faults, was pretty popular in the arcades. You know, even if you basically had to break your knuckles to play the thing properly, you know, with the original arcade cabinet with the pressure buttons on them, that were basically the size of your hand and could basically, if some asshole decided to take the padding out of the bottom of it, would basically break your hand.
Yep.
Well, but it'd be better to say you would be more likely to break your hand, because let's be honest, that fucking thing original, God, it's just a bad idea.
Yeah, they eventually did put a 6-button version out, because, yeah, apparently.
Yeah, it exists if you look for it.
Yeah. But anyway, so the game was a huge hit.
But it was
hit.
Still Street Fighter 1.
Yeah. But the game was still a huge hit, and so, like all arcade games back in the 80s, they, of course, would get ported to just about every system in existence. And in Europe, specifically, they had stuff that we didn't really have over here, like the Spectrum, for example. It got a port on the Spectrum. And it also got a port on the Atari ST. Do you remember the Atari ST? Neither do I.
Actually, I do, because I had one.
Yeah, I don't think it was really much of a thing here in the U.S., to be honest.
No, the ST and the Amiga, they didn't really catch on too well, and I had both of those, so yeah, great luck back then.
Yeah, but basically, so as you can guess, the like I said, the original Street Fighter was ported over to the Atari ST, and it was shit. There were no special moves. The tracking on the thing was shit. Talk about just stuttering crazy. Like, you shift over to one part, to another part of the stage, it might as well not even actually have, like, a freaking animation or anything. It's just like, it just cuts over to the next part of the stage. It was garbage. It also didn't really have much of a soundtrack. There was basically, like, I think one sound loop and then the occasional, and that was about it.
Yeah. I think it had one sound effect, if I remember right.
Yeah.
Just one.
Yeah. So, however, despite that, the game still, that port still sold really well. So well, in fact, that the makers of that particular port actually went over to Capcom and said, "Hey guys, you know, this port of Street Fighter is doing really well. How about we enter in deal, make a sequel, and make a bunch of money?" And the folks over at Capcom were like, "No, go away, stupid Gaijin." It also didn't help that at the time they were actually working on their own sequel to Street Fighter, which turned out to be Final Fight.
Yep.
Yeah, a lot of people don't know that Final Fight was actually supposed to be the original sequel to Street Fighter.
Yeah, in fact, in its development stage, it was called Street Fighter 89.
Yep.
Yeah, there's actually been some new info that's come out about that. So, yeah, I'll have to find the video on YouTube, because there was a full history of it.
Yeah.
But apparently, I can't remember who his name was, the creator. The original title started out as Final Fight, but then Capcom said, "No, you're going to make this a Street Fighter game."
Oh.
And then when it tested, they were like, "No, this is not a Street Fighter game," so they changed it back to Final Fight.
Yeah.
So it doesn't really change much, but still.
Yeah. Anyway, So anyway, the dude's like, you know what? Fuck these people. I'm going to go and make my own Street Fighter game sequel with blackjack and hookers. He actually left the blackjack, but he kept the hookers. You'll see what I mean in a minute.
Yeah.
So he got together with his collaborators, who were U.S. Gold.
You can already tell where this is going.
Oh, yeah. If you've watched enough Guru Larry, you already know, oh, we're about to go up shit mountain. So he came up with basically a pseudo-sequel that was – it was Street Fighter, but it wasn't Street Fighter. The game was called Human Killing Machine. And first of all, unlike the original Street Fighter, you only have one character that you can play as. Only instead of Ryu, it's a Korean fighter named Kwon, who is basically dressed up like a kickboxer. He has boxing gloves for some reason. And his whole storyline is he's a Korean dude who wants to go around and kick people's asses. Game start. So he fights, let's see, I think it's 8 fighters total, or is it 9? It might be 10. I suck at math. But anyway, so basically this is how it goes. First stage is the Soviet Union, specifically out front of St. Basil's Cathedral. And is that Moscow or St. Petersburg? I can't remember. But anyway, the first guy you fight is a guy named Igor, who's a Soviet soldier, and he fights you with a hunting rifle that he uses as a melee weapon for some reason.
Yeah, guess he ran out of bullets or something.
Communism, am I right? But also, he is, for being the first guy you fight, he can murder you really quickly. Because if you get too close to him, that fucking hunting rifle can do some serious damage to you.
Yeah, because it has no recoil.
Yeah. Oh, and did I mention the fact that because of the way this game is built, because the way this game was designed, if you because you're the protagonist, the fighter you are fighting only has to beat you 3 best out of 3, but you have to beat them best out of 5.
Yeah.
There's this weird, like, stupid mechanic where as long as Kwon is quote-unquote strong, he only has to beat them, like, best out of 5, but if he's declared weak, it's, like, even more.
Yeah, basically, I think they think it's if you've got more than half life, you only have to beat them twice, but if you're lower than a third, then you have to beat them 3 times.
It's a really stupid mechanic. It makes no goddamn sense. Also, because of the really shitty coding, your characters will actually regain health.
Yeah,
for no as you're fighting them, which kind of defeats the whole fucking purpose, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So you fight Igor and then you beat him. So who do you fight next? You fight Shepsky, his dog. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Moving on. And after that, you got to go to I think it's Amsterdam. And you have to fight a couple of prostitutes. Yeah. All back. I will say
I like some of their stage ideas.
Yeah, the stage ideas aren't actually that bad. Some of them are legit pretty good. But, you know, they're just so shit because, you know, first of all, there's no scrolling. It's just one screen.
Yeah.
The first is just like a regular prostitute. She doesn't look too bad. She looks quite nice, except for the fact that, you know, the graphics suck. And then you fight the second prostitute, who I'm pretty sure is supposed to be a transsexual prostitute because, well, fucking look at it. look at her. You know, it's just, like, it's not fucking subtle at all. Did I mention that as far as stereotypes in this game go, they're probably even worse than Street Fighter?
That's saying something.
Yeah. So, next thing after Amsterdam, you go off to Madrid, and you have to fight a bullfighter. I think his name's Miguel.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently his back's broken because he has to hold himself up with his saber.
And let's just say Vega is actually tame in comparison to this guy's stereotype.
Yeah, because this dude is straight up just a bullfighter. Mm. Like, there's nothing else to it.
Yep.
So you fight him, and he's dead. So, of course, you fight the bullfighter. Who else you got to fight? The bull.
Of course.
They actually beat fighter's history to the punch by quite a few years there, I guess.
Yeah.
Street
Fighter 5 DLC Season 4.
Yeah.
The bull.
The bull. But then you beat the bull. Okay. So what next? Well, now we go off to Germany. And you fight two guys named Hans and Franz.
Because of course you do.
First dude you fight is Franz. Franz is a waiter. And he basically carries around his wine tray with him. That he's apparently such an impeccable waiter, it never spills.
Yep.
Until he, I guess, dies.
Yeah.
And he is entirely projectile-based. He throws wine bottles at you. And you fight him, you beat him, and you take on Hans. Hans is a giant dude with blonde hair, a dark mustache, and he wears lederhosen.
Yeah.
Yeah, he kind of looks like William Murderface if he was blonde. Seriously, look at that character sprite and tell me I'm wrong.
That is fantastic.
Yeah. So you finally beat them, and then you finally go to the last place you got to fight, which is Beirut in Lebanon.
Mm. Yeah.
Oh, that yes. Would have been,
that was topical back then. So.
Yeah. So you got to fight some terrorists. First dude is an Arab terrorist because he's wearing a kafiah and, yeah. And then finally you go up against the last boss of the game. Literally the guy that you saw at the title screen. Can't remember what his name is, but all you really need to know is that he's a giant bald Russian dude with the rocket launcher on his back. And he has only, like, I think 6 frames of animation at all. Because, see, the thing is, he's giant. He's like a fucking giant. He's like... He's like almost twice as tall as you are.
Yeah.
But because, you know, this is running on an Atari ST screen, that means only so much can be on the screen at a time. So he has like a frame for a punch, frame for a kick, 2 frames to shuffle around, and like 1 falling animation.
Yeah. Well, yeah, 2 frames for falling. Two for shuffling, 1 punch, 1 kick. Basically, seeing as, you know, you'd have to see those falling animations, you'd have to beat them. He technically only actually has 4 frames of animation.
Pretty much. and he never takes that fucking rocket launcher off his back.
No.
Like, it's like, look, this would be perfect for because you know how, like, all, like, in most fighting games, the final boss will usually have that one move that's basically a rule breaker?
Yeah.
You know, like in Tekken, the final boss will be the only one who basically has a projectile attack.
Yeah.
Well,
that was the case at one point, but this guy, nope, not so much.
No. And then you beat it, and that's it.
Yeah.
Like, there isn't really an ending or anything.
Thank you for playing.
Thank you for playing.
Thank you for wasting your money.
Yeah, and I swear, I really wish, there is a really sick part of me that wishes that these characters would be DLC in Street Fighter V.
Or at the very least, Quan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he doesn't even have to look that good. Just make him like, you know, the US mega cover art Mega Man looked like in, what was it, Marvel versus Tekken or whatever.
Or Street Fighter versus Tekken.
Tekken, yeah. Just make him look butt ugly as possible. But, yeah, so, that was Human Killing Machine. It existed.
Don't play it.
Please don't. Just, if you're curious, just watch YouTube. A playthrough on YouTube. Trust me, you're, other than the insanity, you're really not missing much.
Yeah.
So yeah, and you thought that Street Fighter 2099, the final fight, was bad. And that, ladies and gentlemen, has been Brandon's Random Factoid. So, hopefully that'll be the last time we talk about that fucking game.
Until somebody does Human Killing Machine HD Remix.
Yeah, because I'm sorry, I had to talk about it again because I'm absolutely just completely just shocked that that game exists.
And strangely delighted, it sounds like.
Yeah. Just the it's just so fucking it's like all the sins of the original Street Fighter, but like they double down on them.
Oh, by the way, I'm watching that Atari ST Street Fighter port.
Yeah,
I did see a special. In fact, This might be the only version of Street Fighter that has this. It's an Ertatsu.
Intentional.
Yeah. I mean, remember, this is U.S. gold we're talking about. Like,
yeah.
If they do anything properly, it is completely incidental. All right. It's now time to start off with the show proper, and as always, we got to start off with the asshole of the week. Now, we had a few candidates, but this one ended up being the top because it pretty much epitomizes why we fucking hate April Fool's Day. You know, why we just think it's an abomination. So, over in France, the mayor of a city called, what is it?
Let's see.
Beauvais? Beauvais? It's B-E-A-U-V-A-I-S. Beauvais?
Beauvais.
Beauvais, okay. Thank you, resident Canadian. But, yeah, Beauvais in France. And the mayor of that town, Carolyn Caillou, I'm going to call her, you know what, fuck it, I'm going to call her Caillou because she, Mrs. Caillou. I'm going to call you Caillou because fuck you. She decided to have a little April Fool's fun, so she went on the Twitter account, her official Twitter account, and she said that, hey guys, great news. IKEA's coming in. They're going to have 4,000 new jobs.
Hmm.
And then she's like, April Fools! Now, yeah,
you're not getting any new jobs.
Yeah. Yeah, so if you know anything about France right now, they're kind of going through a minor economic crisis like much of Europe.
Yeah.
And people are kind of hurting for jobs over there. Not cool, Miss Mayor.
Yeah.
Not cool.
Joking about that doesn't seem like a great idea.
Yeah, you pretty much just lost your next election.
Hmm.
Like, right there. If they don't straight up drag your ass to the guillotine.
And her excuses here is like, the sense of humor is not shared by everyone.
Oh, God.
But she also,
it's the 4chan excuse, in other words.
Yeah. She also wrote on her Facebook page that the message had been intended to, quote, attract the attention of potential investors, including IKEA.
Oh, bullshit.
And insisted she had too much respect for job seekers to mock those out of work.
She just did.
She did it anyway.
You just fucking did it.
Yeah.
Bitch.
And I guess this particular town has a high unemployment rate.
Yeah.
That's like also just rubbing people's faces in it.
Yeah. See that? When you talk about people's livelihood like that shit, that's just gonna get you fucking murdered.
Yeah.
I mean, this is France we're talking about. They don't exactly have the best history about people mocking the poor. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It usually ends up ending in...
I think they have a terrific history of dealing with that.
It usually ends with some severed heads and being paraded around on the ends of sticks. So yeah, and yet another installment of you want the French Revolution? Because this is how you get the French Revolution. There's a reason why let them eat cake sort of became the rallying cry. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
Stupid, stupid, stupid. This woman read a fucking history book? Like, seriously. This doesn't end well in France. We read this trilogy before. It ends in a lot of bloodshed. But whatever. All right, so... To refresh our you know what? I'm not even going to keep going. We're going to go on with the hero because it's going to end up in another analingus joke, and I just don't want to.
Yeah, let's not go there.
Yeah. Our hero of the week is the Fluid Project. The Fluid Project is the first clothing store specifically aimed at those who are gender fluid. I'm actually surprised no one has done this before.
I think it's also just be a store that doesn't segregate itself by, you know, this stuff is intended for women, this stuff is intended for men.
Yeah, that's and actually not a bad idea.
Yeah. Just have a lot of gender neutral clothes.
Yeah, just it would make sense to, like, sort of instead of, like, segregating it by gender, it's like, hey, this is where you go get – this is the section that sells this type of thing.
Yeah, here's the shirts. Here's the pants. Here's – you know, just have all this stylish clothing that anybody could wear.
Yeah, here's
kind of like a meme that I saw yesterday, all clothes are unisex when you stop giving a shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, this store is in New York City.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's Fluid with a PH.
Mm-hmm.
So they have a message on their door before you walk in. This is a welcoming, inclusive, diverse, and safe space. Intolerance will not be tolerated.
Yeah. I can support that.
Yeah.
Yep.
And, so I'm looking at some photos of this place. It looks pretty stylish. Looks like something I'd see in the mall. Yep. If, you know, it wasn't sinking into its inevitable demise, but still. They've also got these gender-neutral mannequins that they're using here, which still look worryingly emaciated, but
yeah,
okay.
But that's always how they're going to just be creepy.
Yeah. I love the art design of this place.
They got some nice art on the walls.
Yeah. And it's just basically it's not like it's necessarily gender neutral. It's just that it's got stuff that, you know, they don't really segregate it by gender. It's all just put into certain sections. And hey, if you're a dude who likes to wear a skirt, well, here's a place you can buy a skirt for dudes. Or maybe you don't consider yourself a dude because that's kind of the whole point because it's gender fluid. But some of the shit looks pretty, I won't lie, some of this shit looks pretty stylish. We got like some pantsuits on ensembles, we got some nice overalls and shirt combos, some nice jeans. Yeah, this looks pretty tight.
And a bunch of accessories and such.
Yeah. Good job. Nice place. I hope it becomes a franchise.
Yeah.
Because we could certainly use more of this. That's our hero of the week, the Fluid Project. They are breaking boundaries. Fucking A, man. All right. Now it's time to start the proper show. And sadly, we had a unfortunate death yesterday. A man who, if you are an anime fan like we are, he was really important to it, and he made some very important films during his time. Sadly, he's no longer with us. Rest in peace, Isao Takahata, who was co-founder of Studio Ghibli and director of such films as probably his most famous, Grave of the Fireflies.
Yep.
But he also did Pompoko, I think it was the Yoshida family, which is like a based on a famous comic strip. He also, you know, on top of his own films, he also did work on other Studio Ghibli projects. Let's see, what else did he do? Because Miyazaki, Takahata approached anime like an artsy filmmaker would. Let's see, he also worked on, like, television anime like Anne of Green Gables, Future Boy Conan, which, though you don't know, that was also a Miyazaki project, Dog of Flanders, he did some work on Nazca, the Valley of the Wind, and Castle in the Sky, Wow, Grave of the Fireflies was actually his first Studio Ghibli film he directed.
Yep.
Wow, that is a hell of a way to introduce yourself.
I worked on Little Nemo Adventures in Slumberland.
Yeah, he did. My Neighbor's the Yamadas. That's the movie I was thinking of. He also worked on, The Red Lupin Turtle. The Third. Yeah. Lupin the Third.
TV show.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think Miyazaki worked on that one, too. Yeah, he did some amazing films. But Grave of the Fireflies will probably be the one he'll always be remembered for, because holy shit, how can you forget a movie like that?
Yeah.
God damn, that is just... You want to experience having your soul ripped out of you? That's over 90 minutes. That's Grave of the Fireflies in a nutshell.
Yeah, that's like the anime version of Schindler's List. You watch it once,
and you never want to watch it again.
Yeah. It haunts for the rest of your time.
It's just so unrelentingly sad. Like, even the parts that are relatively happy are just drowning in despair. But, yeah, so sadly, Takahata is no longer with us, but he will live forever, and so will his art. He will be traumatizing children for generations. And adults, and teenagers, and just about anyone else that sees that damn movie.
Any family pets who happen to be in the room.
Yeah. Any amoebas that may be on your skin at any given time. By the way, fun fact, that movie was actually a double feature with My Neighbor Totoro.
What the fuck?
Yeah. And guess which movie
Which one of that's in is very important.
Yeah. By the way, guess which movie led in? Guess which movie was the lead in that one? Grave of the Fireflies! Yep. No, they had to put Totoro last because otherwise people would leave once Grave of the Fireflies started.
Yeah, because you need that to wash your mouth out.
Yeah, because you need something as joyful and sweet as My Neighbor Totoro after watching two children slowly starve themselves over 90 minutes. Yeah. yeah, well, all right. So next up, Ted Nugent.
Here we go.
Yeah. So, unfortunately, Ted Nugent isn't really known for his music anymore. You know, back in the 70s, he was like one of the top concert attractions in the world. He'd played double bill with guys like Kiss and Aerosmith. He was known for these outrageous stage shows, usually involving him in a loincloth, swinging in on a Tarzan rope, lots of pyrotechnics, shooting things with a bow and arrow that he would usually light on fire, you know, usually involving things like dancers, maybe even strippers getting involved, and all of this surrounding the fact that he was actually a pretty damn good guitarist.
Yeah.
I think that sometimes gets lost. The dude fucking had talent.
Yes.
He really did. And then at some point in the 80s, I guess all the underage women that he was having sex with finally got to his head.
Mm.
Yeah, people don't like to talk about that much. Fuck it, I am. He basically got a custody of a 16-year-old Hawaiian girl so he could have sex with her.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's classy.
Yeah, well, it gets classier because this week, Ted Nugent, who I want to remind everybody is on the board of the National Rifle Association. He's actually a board member.
Yep.
He basically called the Parkland survivors a bunch of liars.
Yeah, he said a lot of things. Probably read some of his lines here.
Yeah, go ahead.
He was on a nationally syndicated conservative radio program called the Joe Pegs Show.
Yeah.
And these are like run-on sentences, so
yeah, just
combining sentences. So all you have to do now is not only feel sorry for the liars, but you have to go against them and pray to God that the lies can be crushed and the liars can be silenced so that the real measures can be put into place to actually save children's lives. Whew, that was one sentence.
Yep.
The lies from the left, the lies from these poor, mushy-brained children who have been fed lies and parrot the lies. They are actually committing spiritual suicide because everything they recommend will cause more death and mayhem guaranteed. He says lies a lot.
Yeah.
It talks about the dumbing down of America's manifested in the culture deprivation of our academia that have taught these kids the lies, media that have prodded, encouraged, and provided these kids lies, period. I really feel sorry for them because it's not only ignorant and dangerously stupid, but it's soulless. And he continued to attack the good law-abiding families of America when well-known predictable murderers commit these horrors is deep in the category of soulless.
Yep, just let all that sink in and remember who it is that's saying this.
Yep. Effectively, it's the NRA saying it.
Yeah, but keep in mind, this is Ted Nugent talking about the downfall of our culture. You know, the guy who wrote Cat Scratch Fever?
Yep, Cameron Katsky actually responded to his statements on his Twitter account. Said, if only he saw all the tears, if only he had to look into the eyes I've looked into, if only he saw what this did to all of us. And here the NRA is, receiving more fear-based donations than ever. Talk about no soul. This guy better apologize seriously.
Yep.
Knowing Ted Nugent, he'll probably double down. But, yeah. And again, I want to remind people, this is Ted Nugent we're talking about. The guy who famously tried to shoot at a guy from a limousine when he was in New York, going over the bridge. The guy who, again, I would repeat, took custody of a 16-year-old Hawaiian girl so he could have sex with her. Actually, no, I got that wrong. She was 15.
Yeah.
Yeah. The guy who has such songs as Cat Scratch Fever, Wango Tango, and Stranglehold.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the song about how he talks about he has a woman in a stranglehold and then crushes her face?
Yeah.
Yeah, that guy. Which is pretty much the theme of pretty much every song he's ever recorded.
Mm.
Let's be honest. So, yeah, it's just, there's a certain degree of complete, like, just complete absence of any kind of self-awareness that makes it doubly sad. But, oh, it's not just Teddy Boy that got into shit this week, because guess who else? Sean Hannity, a.k.a. the guy who can't keep his mouth off of Trump's dick, which I guess why it always looks like he's eating a bag of Cheetos every time he's on TV.
Ooh.
But, yeah, so Sean Hannity is having a little Twitter feud with Jimmy Kimmel. Because Jimmy Kimmel made a Melania joke.
Yep.
And Shawnee Boy just won't let it go.
He took real offense to it.
Yeah.
Even though he took a lot of shots at Michelle Obama and their kids. So.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he took real offense to it. Called Jimmy an ass clown.
Mm.
And so then Jimmy Kimmel, the next show, dedicated his opening monologue to this whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, just shit on him the entire time.
Yeah.
Like, talking about leaving what an ass clown is.
Uh-huh.
And said, well, if he's an ass clown, then Sean Hannity's the ass circus.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, then that all went back to Twitter, where Sean Hannity... I guess figured out how to look up Jimmy Kimmel on Wikipedia. Found out about The Man Show.
Oh, which, God. Really?
Yeah, if there's a show that has not aged well at all, it's
no.
The Man Show. But yeah, he's been going nuts on his Twitter, making sure to add Disney, because Disney owns ABC and all this.
Mm-hmm.
And calling Jimmy Kimmel Harvey Weinstein Jr. Because of weird skits they did on The Man Show and all that.
Yeah.
By
the way, I want to make sure that make people realize, I don't think that show's been on the air since the
90s. No, it hasn't.
I think it was early 2000s.
Mm. Like
late 90s to early 2000s. Like, 5 or 6 seasons, something like that.
Yep.
So I was kind of around that whole era then. Those two obviously moved on. Jimmy Kimmel's gotten a big show. I guess at one point Sean Hannity actually printed out the Wikipedia page of Man Show episodes as like a, I gotcha.
Mm-hmm. Pretty sure a lot of that shit's still on YouTube, so it's not exactly,
Yeah, and I think there's streaming services that have it as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess he, talked about, let's see, he keeps talking about Jimmy Kimmel, asking 18-year-old girls to grab his crotch.
Yeah.
On that show, which, yeah, that was kind of a lot of its immature humor.
Yeah.
But yeah, like the image of him literally printing out Wikipedia pages is crazy.
Yeah.
And I guess he's dedicating his show tonight to this whole thing.
Oh God.
Yeah. Obviously talking about this, Jimmy Kimmel's been shitting on him in response on his Twitter account and all that.
God, that is just, that is sad.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. Essentially, yeah, just suggesting he is, you know, Harvey Weinstein Jr. has a hashtag and all that. So proud of this. He, listed it on his, site, Hannity.com. Mm-hmm. So yeah, you can go to that site, and the like banner at the top says, Sean Hannity, hashtag Harvey Weinstein Jr. So if you're not exactly up on the Twitter drama, it looks like he's calling himself Harvey Weinstein. So yeah, when stupid people, think they've got the moral high ground, and make sure that everybody else knows, about it, they end up doing stupid things like making people think they're Harvey Weinstein Jr.
Yep.
Be my guest.
Yeah, yeah, please, Sean, keep going with that particular little, a particular little line there. I'm sure it'll turn out real well for you.
And you can obviously point to plenty of examples of him defending, Roger Ailes, Bill O'Reilly, Donald Trump, all these sort of big name, people that are at least serial harassers, if not worse.
Yeah. It honestly kind of looks like their entire, like, Fox's entire sort of opinion part of their channel is just completely imploding.
Yeah.
Because I think we took it off, but Laura Ingraham, yeah, we took that off, didn't we?
Yeah,
yeah, replaced it with this because it was a little bit more interesting.
Yeah, but basically Laura Ingraham, she's currently taking an O'Reilly, which is an unannounced vacation.
As, you know what that means there.
As her sponsors are quickly fleeing her show.
Yeah. She's off this whole week.
Yep. Which, again, if this ends up going the same way it went with O'Reilly, that means she doesn't really have a show anymore.
Yep.
Yeah. Didn't Sean Hannity also take like a break and come back?
Yeah, but I think Hannity has connections that Ingraham doesn't.
Oh, he talks to the president.
Yeah. But, anyway,
it's like, oh, Jimmy Kimmel doesn't lose anything in all of this because he's still a late night talk show host slash like crude comedian.
That's he has a pretty popular talk show too.
Yeah, he has generally one of the most well regarded out there.
Yeah, whereas Hannity is on a network where the average viewer is like in their late 60s. So
yeah, like 60 to 70.
Yeah. But it anyway, seems like
this could be something that could easily blow up and people, let's say, talk to their sponsors about it.
Yeah. Gee, I hope no one does that.
Yeah, I saw something on Twitter about, like somebody named like Owen Benjamin, something like that, who was talking shit about the Parkland, kids.
Mm-hmm.
I think specifically David Hogg. I talk about how, I don't have any sponsors, so you can't do anything to me, so how about your pubic hair and all this weird shit?
Yeah.
Fast forward to him posting on his Facebook because his Twitter account got flagged and suspended, and his Patreon got suspended as well.
Yeah.
Complaining about how now he's got no way to feed his family, and it's like,
oh, boo-hoo, motherfucker.
Don't fuck with the beehive and act like, oh, I'm impenetrable.
Yeah, he's a kid, dude. It's just kind of creepy to be obsessing over a kid's pubic hair, dude. I'm just saying. Like,
you're so young, you don't have pubic hair. It's like, what the fuck are you even talking about?
It's that sort of like they got to make sure they're manly. You know, I'm a man.
Yeah, like I'm older than you, so fuck off.
Yeah. Well, anyway. All right, so apparently the Kremlin let loose today that apparently Trump is wanting to get Vladimir Putin at the White House because apparently they want to host a summit.
I guess talk about this whole diplomat stuff.
Yeah, I guess it might also have something to do with what's going down in Syria. But then again, knowing Donald Trump, I don't think he has the ability to multitask all that well. So...
Yeah,
it's probably the diplomat shit, and
obviously the jokes are, oh, he's just showing the boss how things are going.
Yeah,
all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, if Putin shows up in the U.S., they're gonna have to he's gonna have to come in via helicopter, because if he tries to step out of a limo here in the U.S., he's gonna get fucking lynched.
Yeah, there's going to be a huge crowd around the White House.
Yeah. You know, Sic Semper Tyrannis, motherfucker! You know what I'm saying? And if there is a tyrant, there is Putin.
But also that this is coming out of the Kremlin and not anybody at the White House.
Yeah.
Also says a lot.
Yeah, it does.
Well, you can't believe either of them anyway, so what does it matter?
Yeah, that's true.
But it's that the Kremlin's more reliable than our own White House.
Yeah, that's the... kind of to the depressing part, isn't it?
Yeah, because when he had the diplomats in his office, no U.S. media got any pictures or anything, but the Kremlin magically had some.
Oh, yeah.
We learned that this was all happening because of the Kremlin.
Mm-hmm. Remember I've said it before, I'll say it again. There's nothing... The only thing that's worse than evil is incompetent evil.
Hmm.
You know?
Chaotic stupid.
Yeah, chaotic stupid. There we go. So speaking of Trump, and we got a couple of Trump stories. As we talked about, I think we talked about it last week, Sinclair Broadcasting, conglomerate, owns a bunch of local news stations, also infamous for forcing these stations to broadcast Sinclair's personal propaganda, sometimes forcing them to disguise it as if it were legit news segments.
Yeah, which had that really stark video showing a variety of local news hosts
having to read the same script. Yeah, and for the record, I've known about the Sinclair stuff for a while because John Oliver did a segment on them on Last Week Tonight a while back.
Yeah, they're trying to buy the stations owned by Tribune Media, which would give them a very sizable audience. They already own a ton of local stations. This would give them even more. I think even like some of the notable ones are like WGN.
Yeah.
Did
we mention their really shitty contracts that they make people sign? The ones where if you want to quit, you not only have to have like a non-competition clause that lasts for like 2 years, but you also have to pay back like, what was it, like 40% of your salary?
Yeah, I saw some lawyers suggesting that none of that would hold up in court.
Yeah.
That they couldn't necessarily force people to do that.
It doesn't really matter if you can intimidate people strongly enough, they'll believe it.
Yeah.
But anyway, so the president, he tweeted support.
Yep, Sinclair.
Mm-hmm.
Says, Sinclair is far superior to CNN and even more fake NBC, which is a total joke. Which is funny because, obviously, the Trump campaign invested in Sinclair during their presidential campaign.
Mm-hmm.
So they are effectively state... media.
I think it was Jen Kuger said that as far as local news is concerned, there are no news anchors. There's only news actors. Because unfortunately, there, as far as local, outside of like the big cities, there really isn't that much journalism happening in local news. It's mostly just people relaying information to you.
Yeah.
And with groups like Sinclair, it's even worse because, like we said, you basically, they basically force their propaganda on the people that work for them.
Yeah. Yeah. Which
it's
is
like Pravda, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And it's not even a common thing again for local stations.
Mm-hmm.
Like generally, the companies that do own them don't force segments on them.
Mm-hmm.
And some have tried to rebel and all that.
Yeah.
Like trying to air those things like in the middle of the night when nobody's watching, sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's going to become harder as they own more and more.
Mm-hmm.
Of these stations. And like WGN, which was one that here, mm-hmm. we get in Ohio, it's a Chicago station that airs a lot of Cubs games. And so, yeah, like that's a big one to get.
Mm-hmm. 'Cause
you get a fairly big coverage out of it. 'Cause I think I looked up the ones that they do currently own, and I don't think we get any of those.
Mm-hmm.
Even ones that are in like Columbus. It's like, I don't think I get it. We got a lot of stations, so they might be hidden somewhere, but. So
if you want to build if you want to build a vast network of state-owned propaganda dissemination outlets, this is how you do it.
Yeah,
I would definitely say watch the John Oliver segment on Sinclair.
Yeah, it will. If you aren't scared beforehand, you will be terrified afterwards.
Yeah, if you think Fox News is state media, Sinclair is even worse.
Yeah.
They have segments like the Terrorist Watch, which when there's no actual terrorism going on, it's just about Muslims.
Yeah, they just make shit up.
Yeah, or they talk about like the burkini stuff that was happening in France.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, here's your terrorism watch. It's shit about Muslims.
Yeah, and trust us, that's by design.
That is about as much red meat for the right wing base as it gets.
Yeah, but also, I think this week, the CEO of Sinclair, basically, you know, as this stuff was going down, he kind of just threw fuel on the fire by basically doubling down on this shit. He's like, "Screw you, I own it." Yeah. And
yeah, which is why I forget who is investigating the government about Ajit Pai sort of letting overturning the rules that prevented.
Mm-hmm.
People from buying too many of these local stations.
Yeah.
So they could potentially do this Tribune Media thing.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
But that goes in the right direction.
Yeah.
Yeah. And finally, it's specifically with Trump himself. He has publicly denied knowledge of paying Stormy Daniels, which may get his lawyer in serious trouble. Because
isn't that called throwing someone under the bus?
Yeah. It's also something that could get Cohen totally
disbarred.
Yeah.
For signing agreements for a client without informing them. So either he's lying and you got something there.
Yeah.
Or he's telling the truth, and his lawyer's lawyer have a lot of work cut out for him.
Oh, yeah.
Either way, he's fucked.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but somehow like, Teflon Don is somehow managing to evade a lot of this, but it keeps piling up.
Yep.
And it'd be like, it wouldn't be so ironic and just hilarious that this is what ends up sinking him?
Yep.
But yeah, the less we dwell on that, the better. Because, God, it makes me want to vomit thinking about it, you know?
Yeah.
I do not want that image in my head. But next up, some of you guys may know that sometime back there was a woman, a cyclist. She was photographed giving Trump's motorcade the finger as it was driving by.
Yeah.
And once her identity was revealed, she was actually fired from her place of employment. Well, she's back now, and she's actually suing her ex-employer for wrongful termination.
Yep.
I think that's a pretty solid case.
Yeah.
Yeah, because her employer is a government contractor.
Yeah.
And it's sort of, she says, I filed this lawsuit against my former employer today because I believe that Americans should not be forced to choose between the their principles and their paychecks.
Right.
Because she believes that they fired her to not disrupt their future prospects for contracts.
Yeah. And plus, I guess, since they work for the government, there's certain, like, things that – because if you're technically a government contractor, doesn't that technically mean that you are sort of a part of the state? And doesn't that mean that if you're a part of the state, there are certain rights and liberties that a person who works for the state has protection for instead of like a private – yeah.
Yeah, and
because like if this was a private enterprise, then you know they could let her go for any reason, pretty much.
Yeah.
Which sucks, but that's the bit. That's how it is. But
yeah, she mentions here that her suit argues that it violates Virginia employment law for a government contractor to fire an employee out of fear of unlawful government retaliation.
Mm-hmm.
Which seems like pretty tight case.
Mm-hmm.
But she also mentions that another reason for this is because several months prior to her firing, she had reported a male colleague whose Facebook cover photo featured reference to the company for calling a coworker a, I believe if I understand all this censorship, a fucking libtard asshole during a discussion about Black Lives Matter on Facebook.
Original. Yeah.
The man original. Senior director of operations was not fired. Obviously, that did not make the news like her stuff.
Yeah.
Which she ended up even making that like her Facebook avatar.
Mm-hmm.
So not exactly hiding it herself. But yeah.
Mm-hmm.
She ends here, it is un-American to let the government use your own tax dollars to buy your off-duty obedience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just peachy. So, yeah, that's pretty much the end of the Trump section, I guess.
Yeah.
Now we get on to general politics. Specifically, Trey Gowdy, a.k.a. he with the triangle head.
Yeah.
So he's representative from South Carolina, and pretty soon he's not going to be because he's not running for re-election. He's basically said that the whole time he was there, it was just a waste of time.
And this was
kidding. You basically were the one who wasted it.
And his quote is, "I don't have a lot to show for the last 7 years."
Yeah, no kidding.
And yeah, so on his way out, he just basically has a "don't fucking care about anything."
Yeah.
Attitude. He's even relayed how many more trips he has to the airport.
Mm-hmm.
I can tell you right now, I have 19 more drives to the airport before this session is over. 19 more weeks for the rest of the year that I'm going to be gone 3 or 4 days away from home.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, I'll be in South Carolina. He says he's going to be going back into going back to being a judge or something like that. He's not a big fan of politics anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect.
Yeah.
On things.
Wonderful.
And he says, and you won't see me running for political office again.
Well, good.
Oh, I...
Ended on the witch is dead.
Yeah, just... Yeah. Oh, no. How terrible.
Yeah.
And he does actually say a good point here about like the current tactics of conservatives, which is, I think it's effective at raising issues, but I don't think it's effective at resolving them.
Well...
Really?
Yeah. Makes sense.
Yeah,
if
well,
the issues you raise are the complete wrong ones, then yeah,
they're gonna fail.
Even when they do find good causes, they don't know how to do anything with them.
Yeah. So next up in news that can be kind of worrying or kind of an honor, depending on how you look at it, the Department of Homeland Security has basically it's been let out that they're starting to. Collect names and addresses of various journalists and commentators and political people, like keeping tabs on them.
Well,
yeah. So they announced this public bid they want to fill for somebody to build a third-party database for them, for media influencers. Track about 290,000 news sources across the globe.
Hmm. Yeah, wonderful.
Personal information, publications, and I guess sort of the once the database will rank and categorize news sources according to a variety of factors, including content, topics covered, reach, circulation, location, and sentiment.
Mm-hmm. We're safe.
We'll just be at the bottom of the list.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll probably be on it, but hell, I'll take that as a badge of honor. In fact, we should get like little pins made that says, I'm on the DHS watch list.
No, but they said they included reach.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think we qualify.
Yeah.
Well, somebody should kickstart that shit. Seriously. Take it as a badge of honor.
Yeah, so the expiration for the bids they're taking is April 13th.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess we'll find out more.
On the 13th. Or afterwards, I guess.
Afterwards, yeah.
Yeah, wasn't there another country some time ago that did something similar?
There's a handful of them.
Hmm. Yeah, I wonder how that went for them. Yeah.
Nazi Germany, the Soviet Union, Turkey, Saudi Arabia.
Yeah,
I think there's a book about this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Couple of them, actually. Yeah, next up in good news, because this is actually good news. So those of you who have been watching the U.S. recently have noticed that down here in Red State Country, the freaking teachers are revolting.
Yeah.
There has been a wave of massive teacher strikes that have been just over, just going all over the southern U.S. Started in West Virginia. We got one coming up in Texas.
Kentucky had one.
Kentucky had one. I will not be surprised if we end up having one here in Georgia at some point.
Yeah.
I won't be surprised if we start seeing them in Louisiana or Mississippi or any of those. Because once they found out they could win in West Virginia, that meant they could pretty much win anywhere.
Yeah.
And, it's freaking amazing. We haven't had, like, a type of massive labor unrest like that in decades here in the U.S. And the thing is, some of this shit is like wildcat strikes. Like, there are people who are actually teachers but aren't in part of that particular district who are actually coming in supporting the other teachers.
Yeah.
Like, that almost never happens here. You know, they show now it's happening. The wave of strikes is now coming to Oklahoma. And on social media, various teachers put out video footage of the type of conditions they have to deal with Oklahoma schools, way out of date textbooks that are falling apart, fungus.
Not having enough for their students.
Yeah, fungus growing in places, you know, flood hazards. I'm sure those places are just bathing in asbestos.
And the lawmakers are basically scrambling to find things to tax to raise up the money for this.
Yeah, and their current governor, state governor, didn't really help matters when she basically went on television and said it was basically the teachers asking for raises was like teenagers asking for a new car.
Yeah, that's a good way to like throw gas on the fire.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's like you gave them a lemon. Said,
yeah, and you know what's the best part about that? There was like I don't think it was like a town hall meeting or anything, but there was like a point when the governor came out of a car and she was going into, I guess, the state capitol building, and she was met by several hundred Oklahoma teachers who, as soon as she showed up, started jingling car keys and chanting, "Where's my car?"
This is not going to end well.
Nope.
Nope.
And the cool thing about the teacher strikes is that they have real leverage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they can just say, "We're not teaching your kids anymore."
Yeah.
Until our demands are met. And it's like, oh, fuck.
Yeah.
Parents don't want to do anything with the kids. I want them to leave them alone for 8 hours a day and hopefully learn something.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly to leave them alone for a few hours.
Yeah, because our education system, public education, sucks in the U.S. Mm-hmm. And you're starting to see why.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I know as far as like Canada is concerned, it probably has its issues too. But I'm pretty sure most of you guys over in Canada get, you know, tend to get relevant textbooks, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
I do try to keep them up to date and try to teach things that are, you know, not 30 years out of date. So,
yeah, it's, you know, even if, you know, they start making noise in Alberta, they still eventually shut their mouths and take it. So, Alberta, it's like Texas to Canada or Montana. Screw it, it's both. Anyway, so, next up. Oh, yeah. Did we mention that we're in the middle of a trade war with China now?
How many of us didn't see this coming?
Yeah, so Trump's like... I
mean, this is supposed to be easy to win, aren't they?
Yeah. So, you know, Trump's like, we're going to have a 100 million tariff on Chinese imports. Mm. So China's like, well, yeah, we're going to have a 200 million tax on Chinese imports.
Yeah, I think it's in the billions at this point. I think mm-hmm. Trump is trying to get one for $100 billion.
Yeah.
But we don't know what's all going to be on that. So, but yeah, there's sanctions on Chinese products.
Mm-hmm.
China responded by putting a bunch of U.S. products on tariffs, which includes a lot of meats, fruits, soybeans, all sorts of stuff, like things that are really going to hit red states hard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
People that supported Trump.
And that is by design. Yeah, don't think. The Chinese aren't stupid.
Nope.
They know what they're doing.
I know that Trump is stupid. He just walked right in and started his own base.
Mm.
It's like that guy when I used to play Age of Empires, and one of the things what people would do is, you know, they'd build up walls around their fortifications, and eventually you'd storm their bases and break through their walls, and then, you know, they'd come back and they'd rebuild them. Mm-hmm. But they'd use your own, the walls that you still control. So, yeah, mm-hmm. you would just go in and just delete the wall and let your forces in. So, yeah, it looks kind of like that to me. Just a bunch of stupidity going on.
Yeah.
It's almost like Trump is the guy that just constantly goes all in when you're playing poker.
Yeah.
As a way of just forcing you to give up.
Which explains why he's gone bankrupt so many times.
Yeah. And then he runs into the guy that actually knows what he's doing and calls him on his bluff. Yeah. And he's like, fuck.
God damn. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like that. You can eat anything you can do. I can do better. He just keeps one upping it.
Yeah. In this case, I'm not sure you really want to get into a trade war, but China. I mean, this just doesn't seem like a very good
idea. It's the same thing as like getting in a land war in Asia. Mm. Just don't do it. You will lose.
Yeah. It's eventually. Like so much of the Trump brand is made in China.
Yeah.
Moving on, okay, this one you're going to have to explain to me. Apparently there's some seagulls that really love pepperoni, and because of this, it's got this dude, this Canadian dude banned from a Victorian hotel.
What?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
I saw the story. It was amazing.
Okay, tell me how this isn't a non sequitur.
Yeah, so this happened in Victoria in a hotel called the Fairmont Express, or Empress.
Yeah, this is in BC, yep. British Columbia. Yeah.
Yeah, so this guy named Nick, I guess this happened 17 years ago,
yeah.
Trashed his hotel room. Let's see. He was taking a small suitcase full of Brothers pepperoni requested of him from his Navy friends in the BC capital. Yep. this is a Halifax delicacy, so they wanted it on this, so you bought a bunch of it to take back. Let's see, it was a long flight, that time of year where everyone travels, so the bag got lost, misplaced for a period of time. When the pepperoni bag finally arrived at the hotel, Rachel said he worried it would get warm because there was no fridge. So he laid the food out on a table near the window ledge the cheery April air. And as he says here, that's when things kind of went bad.
Yeah.
See, he left the room for a few hours to take a walk and returned to a room full of seagulls. I don't mean just a couple of seagulls. I can only estimate how many there were. I'm thinking somewhere between 30 and 40 seagulls had come in through this window while I was gone. And I would never have. I would have never thought of that because the East Coast seagulls aren't that brazen. They never come into a room or do that sort of thing. At least I don't think they would. these are the ghetto seagulls. Just like, hey, pepperoni, eh? This is good stuff. The seagulls were startled when Birchall opened the door. He said many tried to leave through the small opening all at once. The seagulls went flying everywhere, and they had been there for a long time eating Brothers TNT pepperoni. Mm-hmm. So you can imagine what the room looked like even before I came back. And now we've got seagulls flying around, the curtains are falling down, the lamps are falling down. It was a real mess. Complicating matters was the fact that he had just started his job 3 months earlier. His employer had booked the hotel, and he needed to attend dinner with customers. There were two seagulls left in the room, and he had to get them out. One was just bouncing around on the windowsill, and I was kind of losing my temper at this point. So I took off one of my shoes, and I threw it in the direction of seagull, and both the seagull and the shoe went out the window.
Mm-hmm.
The last seagull, it was running around the room, and this is a fairly large room. Nice room, or it was. And I was chasing the seagull around, and it had a big piece of pepperoni in its mouth, and I could not get it to leave. I said he ended up grabbing a towel from the washroom. He jumped the seagull, wrapped it in a towel, and threw it out the window.
Mm-hmm.
He said the seagull was shaken but wasn't hurt while everything was happening in his room. He said there was a line of tourists out in front of the hotel, and they witnessed both his shoe and the seagull wrapped in a towel falling from his room. He said, I guess that made an impression on some people. It wasn't very smooth. He went downstairs to get his shoe and his towel. Went back up into his room where the smell of birds and pepperoni was becoming more apparent. But he had to get to the dinner with customers, so he started to clean his shoe, which had fallen into some mud.
Mm-hmm.
And
at least he got it back.
Yeah, this is pure sitcom shit.
Yeah,
it gets better.
As he was driving,
this is like Seinfeld.
As he was driving the shoe with the hairdryer, the power went out in his room. At that point, Birchall said he, quote, realized I was way in over my head with this mess. Called the front desk for help. They sent this poor lady up, and I still remember the look on her face when she opened the door. She had her cleaning kit with her, and it was quite clear that the kit that she had with her was not going to cover the damage and the mess that was in the room.
Mm-hmm.
And so, the hotel staff were nice about the whole thing, but a letter was sent to his employer telling him he would no longer be allowed to stay in the Empress. And it was a decision that he said he respected and understood, but he wanted to make amends. So he came back, 17 years later to speak with the staff member who dealt with him the last time, but was told she was no longer an employee. Let's see. When I was talking to the people at the desk and the manager, they did say they heard the story from a longtime employee that works there. I was just kind of in and out. I didn't want to overstay my welcome. So he apologized to him. He was forgiven. Brought them a pound of Brothers TNT pepperonis, a peace offering. So they, said, okay, it's all good. I've made friends That's with fantastic. One of the managers there. He's made it quite clear that I'm encouraged to stay with them. They'll be disappointed if I don't. All's well that ends well, but that's a hell of a story.
Yeah. Yeah, if you don't remember why the power went out in his room, it's because he was drying out his shoe. He put the hairdryer into the shoe, and it fell out and went into the sink and tripped the ground fault interrupter, which blew the power. So,
This is like something you'd see Kramer do on Seinfeld. Yeah. But next up, we got some space stories. So, first space story, the Chinese Space Lab It's been, you know, up and there. We found out this week it was going to come down this week, and it crashed into the South Pacific.
Yep.
Yeah, there are a lot of stories where they were saying, we have no control of this thing. We don't know where it's going to land.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I saw Fox News suggest it was going to land in Michigan, which then I was pretty sure wasn't going to happen. But yeah, ended up landing somewhere around Samoa.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it landed just fine out in the middle of the ocean, so no real issues.
Nope.
But, yeah.
Yeah, luckily it didn't land in somebody's backyard.
Yeah, that would have been unfortunate.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it would have still been Chinese property.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ooh, that could have been a... That could have been a potential international incident right there.
Yeah.
Especially if it landed, like, in Texas or something.
Yep.
Well, anyway. And then next up for a actually really cool story. The first hotel in space... They announced that they are going to be launching it in 2022.
Yep. All right. First, the cost, $9.5 million per person.
Okay. I won't be going to space.
Nope. Yep.
Yeah, so the trip is going to be a 12-day trip. Yeah, so that is going to be starting in 2022.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. They say that it has taken what was historically a 24-month training regimen to prepare travelers to visit a space station, streamlined it to 3 months.
Yeah.
At a fraction of the cost. Which, that's... Going to space is really, really expensive.
Yeah, and, ain't no joke either, because, human body needs to prepare itself before it goes out there.
Yeah.
And you gotta get into good shape.
Yeah, because you're pretty much going to be floating out there, and you know, human body does things when it doesn't have to rely on, you know,
like
gravity.
Your spine.
Yeah,
when your spine doesn't have to do much of anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it'll fly at a height of 200 miles above the Earth's surface in low Earth orbit. Yeah, so it'll orbit the Earth every 90 minutes, so you get about 16 sunrises and sunsets every 24 hours.
Yeah.
See, activities will include taking part in research experiments, such as growing food while in orbit, which you can take home for a super smug souvenir. Guests can have live video chats with their less fortunate loved ones back home via high-speed wireless internet access. And upon return to Earth, we'll be greeted with a specially arranged hero's welcome. And while enjoying the thrills of zero gravity, the travelers will be able to float freely through the hotel, taking views of northern and southern aurora from the station's windows. They're already taking deposits.
Mm-hmm. Which, I'm going to be kind of honest, that's kind of concerning.
Yeah, they're fully refundable.
Okay.
Yeah, should applicants find themselves unable to get the full $9.5 million.
Yeah.
Yeah, travelers will complete a three-month Orion Span astronaut certification program for takeoff.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, they have a team of space industry veterans who are managing all of this.
Mm.
They're not the only ones trying to set up commercial space stations up in space. There's another one called Axiom Space that is trying to do it by 2024.
Mm-hmm.
It'll begin by taking tours to the ISS in 2019 and later to its own station. They haven't announced their prices yet on that one.
Yeah.
Virgin Galactic is doing its own thing.
Yeah, see, here's the thing. This is kind of how Police Knot started. Once they started with the hotels, and then they started doing the permanent space colonies, and then all the rich people basically fled and kind of left Earth to decay.
Yeah, that's probably what's going to happen.
Yeah. Well, anyway, next up, Russell Crowe is going through a really Nasty Divorce, and he is actually going to be hosting a Art of Divorce auction. Yeah.
And there's a bunch of interesting stuff in there.
Yeah, such as?
So if you've seen the movie Cinderella Man, he's wearing a leather boxer's jockstrap.
Uh-huh.
That'll be in there. They estimate $500 to $600, I think, Australian.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so they have the fake dead horse from Gladiator. About $2,000 to $4,000, they estimate.
Mm-hmm.
It'll end up selling for. It'll also come with a letter from Russell Crowe stating his ownership.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so yeah, they had this big old event called The Art of Divorce. Yeah, that he is hosting. I think they just put up the lots on the website so people can see what's all in there. Lots of rich people stuff, jewelry. He has a 2001 Mercedes S-Class
mm-hmm.
with 101,000 kilometers on it.
Mm-hmm.
Estimated to sell for about $15,000 to $25,000. Yeah, labeled as one of Russell Crowe's personal cars, his vehicle also served as one of the wedding cars on the day of his marriage to Danielle Spencer on April 2003. Yeah, lots of women's jewelry, including a yellow diamond ring, 5.13 carats, estimated $70,000 to $200,000. Yeah. A bunch of watches. Yeah, some that are, let's see, a stainless steel watch from Tiffany & Company, about $800 to $1,200.
Mm-hmm.
Quote, this was the first watch I bought in the U.S. after making The Quick and the Dead in 1995. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you can go up on the site and like read a lot of interesting trivia about some of the things that he bought when he bought them, all that stuff. It's like a pair of ice skates used as Sheriff John Beebe in Mystery Alaska.
Hmm. And if you're a Russell Crowe fan, well, you can own some of the props from the movies that you might enjoy.
Yeah. So. It's a full outfit he wore in Master and Commander.
Mm-hmm.
$25,000 to $35,000. A leather sketchbook used by his character in 310 to Yuma.
Hmm.
No idea if it's been used, but $350 to $450.
Mm.
Yeah, there's a life-size bronze statue of Don Bradman,
mm-hmm.
An Australian cricketer, $50,000 to
$60,000. Okay, the person who buys that is going to have a very, very specific taste.
Yeah.
That'll probably be like an owner of a cricket team, I would assume.
Mm-hmm.
That seemed like a sort of thing like somebody in the sports scene down there would own. Yeah, let's see. Yeah, he has bikes, motorcycles in there as well, and a bunch of other stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, lots of interesting stuff. Definitely people should check that out.
Oh, yeah.
If you got plenty of money, you could maybe get some of this stuff. I don't know what shipping would be for this.
Expensive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Very.
Ask him if it's included in the price.
Mm.
Probably not.
Yeah.
It's probably you got to figure out what you're going to do with this.
Yeah.
Mm. All right. Next story. Actually, pretty nice story. In their ongoing sort of way of slowly opening themselves out back up to the modern world, Saudi Arabia has announced what the first film shown in Saudi Arabia in 35 years will be. It's Black Panther.
Yeah, that's a hell of a film to start with.
Well, if you think about it, it makes good thematic choice.
Yeah.
I mean, what is the whole plot of Black Panther? It's an extremely isolated, very kind of conservative kingdom that's slowly realizes that it can't hide itself from the rest of the world anymore, and it needs to start, opening itself up and letting the rest of the world sort of stop being this sort of isolated little. You get what I'm getting at, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, it makes the mech sense for the overall idea that the Crown Prince is trying to get through.
Yeah,
and it's one of the biggest movies out there right now.
Yeah, for good reason. It's actually pretty good.
Yeah.
And I guess this is all part of a deal that they've done with AMC.
Yeah.
Open up a bunch of new cinemas in, 40 cinemas in 15 Saudi cities. Over the next 5 years, they're going to be opening up.
Yeah. And if you think about it, that's going to be – it might be a bit of a culture shock for a lot of people in Saudi Arabia because, you know, the women in that movie tend to be – they're strong and they're not necessarily scantily clad, but they aren't covered up either.
No. You can see their faces.
Yeah. And their hair.
Yeah.
You know, if they have any. And cleavage.
Yeah.
And bare arms. Sometimes bare legs.
Yeah.
This is just the Crown Prince's way of telling the Wahhabi sects to just go fuck themselves.
He's doing it in, like, the best way possible.
Yeah. It's like, first, you know, he's got it so, like, you know, the women can drive now. It's going to be eventually he's going to get it where the women won't have to be required to wear the veil anymore.
Yeah.
Which we know that for that is already in the works because, you know, they've been talking about it.
Yeah.
So they mentioned here that the cinemas will not be segregated by gender.
Yeah, that's another big deal.
Yep. But yeah, no more word on sort of what sort of movies they allow to be shown.
Yeah.
But it seems like there will probably be some censorship in specific instances, but probably not for this movie.
Yeah. Maybe political stuff. I mean.
Yeah.
I'm not necessarily, you know, it. You got to admit, it's really neat to see this happening. Because Saudi Arabia is like the most notoriously repressive places on the planet, with both having like an absolute, like just extreme disparity in wealth. You know, the migrant workers, the way they're treated there. And apparently the Crown Prince has finally realized that, you know, if Saudi Arabia is going to survive into, you know, the 22nd century, it's going to have to seriously start making some changes.
Yep.
And he's got the king's blessing. So, yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure there's also good news for movie studios where this is probably an area where piracy has been huge.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And so a way of getting some legitimate money out of the out of these people who like to watch movies. Be good news for them.
Yeah. And, like, the thing about them not being segregated by gender, that's another big deal. Because, holy shit, that is one of the most gender segregated – that is probably the most gender segregated place on Earth.
Yeah.
Like, outside of a monastery. So, yeah, that's going to be – man, I'm excited to see what's going to be happening there. There's some big changes that have been coming to that place. Next up, and if you haven't figured out, this is the entertainment portion of the program now. ESPN finally realized that, you know, it might be time to start getting into the streaming game. So they have finally announced their ESPN Plus streaming service.
Yeah, and this still probably isn't the cord cutter service. So it's going to be launching on April 12th, $4.99 a month. You can also just pay a lump sum every year for $49.99, which is what about 10 months worth? So that'll be probably the preferable thing. But what this service is going to offer is kind of a jack of all trades offering. So generally, if you're into any of these specific leagues, you are probably better off going for their specific streaming service. But if you're just general sports fan, wants a little bit of everything, this is probably pretty good for you.
Also, if you like, you know, stuff that's more esoteric, like, you know, Canadian football or curling or stuff, pool or stuff like that, you'll find that there too.
Yeah, for the big leagues, they will have MLB on there. One free game per day. MLB TV is available as an add-on for $24.99 per month. That seems a little bit stiff. Like, just get the app in service.
It's cheap.
Because I'm sure that app will be a lot more useful than this.
Yeah.
So I guess maybe props if they let you just use that account in MLB TV's app.
Yeah.
I know some will allow that sort of stuff, but same goes for NHL, a game per day, and an add-on fee for the whole season per month. Yeah, so they will also have a bunch of other sports. They got boxing. They got a year-round schedule for that. Mm-hmm. And I guess some exclusive fights here and there.
Mm-hmm.
MLS, you get more than 250 games. Yeah, exclusive access for subscribers to the entire MLS out-of-market schedule.
Mm-hmm.
Before launch, fans can access free MLS out-of-market games streaming live on MLSsoccer.com and the MLS app. So I guess you can use this login on those separate services if you want to do that.
Yeah.
I guess ESPN Plus will be the exclusive local markets home for the Chicago Fire. So putting all of their matches on the service.
Yeah.
College sports will be having a bunch of stuff. Thousands of games and events. Let's see. There'll be football, basketball, baseball, softball, soccer, track and field, gymnastics, swimming, diving, lacrosse, wrestling, volleyball, golf, and more. So I assume it's like all the stuff they would have on ESPNU.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
As well as some of the main channels for the bigger stuff. Conveniently, not going to have any of the big networks, the big conferences that have their own services.
Mm-hmm.
Of course not. Big Ten, SEC, I think Pac-12, and the Big 12 are not on this list.
Yeah.
They have a bunch of the smaller ones, so... yeah, they mentioned the spring sports, college baseball and softball. Lacrosse, tennis, track and field, and all that stuff. It's just more of the college stuff here. The PGA Tour, they'll have a bunch of those, 31 events, including the Players' Championship, FedEx Cup playoffs, AT&T, a couple of their events. Covers include Thursday, Friday, and some Saturday and Sunday play during the events.
Mm.
I imagine that's where some of the exclusive stuff that the tour has with, like, NBC, I think it is.
Yeah.
That's where they'll probably come into contact with and conflict with it.
Mm.
Grand Slam tennis, they have hundreds of matches, also including Wimbledon, U.S. Open, and Australian Open. So there'll be a bunch of that stuff. They also have rugby and cricket. Hundreds of matches from international rugby and cricket. Sanzar, the HSBC World Rugby Sevens Series, 18 regular season matches, mm-hmm. and the inaugural season of Major League Rugby, which is the American Professional Rugby League.
Okay.
And a bunch of other leagues for cricket as well. So yeah, like a lot of stuff that seems like this is what ESPN3 is. It's being spun out into its own thing.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, like, this isn't the bulk of what you probably want out of an ESPN streaming service.
Yeah.
But it's, like, what they'll give you.
Well, I think this is also, like, a base step into that market. Because, you know, Disney, ABC, they know that they have to get into that whole streaming market. Because,
mm-hmm. yeah.
Well, I mean, they've invested. They've got BAM Media, so... they know this is where it's going. It's just they're mm-hmm. gonna milk the whole cable market as long as they can, and then when that model no longer is viable, well, they'll be ready for the full streaming package.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, though they could also just jump right in, have both.
They could, but their investors would go apeshit.
mm-hmm.
We can't be making too much money here. We got to be working our way up to that. Yeah, they'll have some original programming as well, but I assume, you know, you're not going to get Sports Center or Pardon the Interruption or Around the Horn or any of that stuff.
No.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be probably a lot of smaller stuff that's probably tailored to the specific sports that they'll have there.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, it's definitely not going to be something you're going to cut the cord for.
No. All right. Well, next up, we now know a new project that Jordan Peele is working on. After he won his Oscar, everybody's just fucking, dude, get us with him. Do a project with us. And the next thing he's doing He's doing a documentary series for Amazon on, of all people, Lorena Bobbitt.
Yep.
Yeah, so we need to, I guess, because this was a thing that happened back when we were kids. We may need to explain this one.
Yeah, this was sort of a probably the big thing that happened that kicked off kind of the 24-hour news.
Yeah, this cycle. Happened before OJ. Yeah, so
it's about a year before.
Yeah.
Essentially, this happened in 93. She very much got revenge on her husband, who committed domestic violence against her. Decided to go and pull out a kitchen knife, cut off his penis, and yep. threw it into a field.
Yep, she cut off his wee-wee.
Yep.
And it still became a joke ever since.
Yeah.
For
a feminist icon, which is what I like to think she was.
Yeah. Still, it's like a joke that's made now for emasculate men. Yeah, it's
basically because here's the thing you also got to remember: her husband was also a philanderer.
Yeah,
and you know that's kind of it's sort of become like this the joke. Like he's like, if you find out you got your side chicks, you don't want to end up with a Lorena Bobbitt situation. So
yeah, it's kind of lessened the actual things that happened before that.
Yeah, because there's a reason she did this. It isn't like she just suddenly got a wild notion in her head. No, she'd been suffering some shit from her husband. And for those who are curious, her husband, who was it John Bobbitt?
John Wayne Bobbitt.
John Wayne Bobbitt, yeah. They did find it, and they did reattach it.
Yeah.
And he ended up getting a porno deal out of it.
Okay. Yeah. That was the 90s?
Yeah, that did happen.
And basically, I guess this whole story is going to be about, you know, the documentary is going to be about Lorena Bobbitt herself, sort of how this whole thing happened, how her life was afterwards.
Yeah, Peel put out a statement about this sort of, when we hear the name Bobbitt, we think of one of the most sensational incidents to ever be catapulted into a full-blown media spectacle.
Uh-huh.
With this project, Lorena has a platform to tell her truth as we engage in a critical conversation about gender dynamics, abuse, and her demand for justice. This is Lorena's story, and we're honored to help her tell it.
Yeah. Sadly, kind of 20 years too late, because, like I said, this became a punchline in the 90s. And
yeah, it's never too late, especially as you got young people growing up and learning about this stuff.
Yeah, and especially considering, you know, with the Me Too movement and all that stuff, it's remarkably timely.
About old events sort of being able to bring a fresh new perspective and even figuring out things that people didn't figure out about them back then.
Yeah. Mm. It's going to be great to – I actually want a legit watch to this because this sounds – I mean, if Jordan Peele's attached to it, it's going to have some good quality to it.
Yep.
So it'll be fun to watch it. I don't want to say fun, more gripping.
Yeah. It seems Joshua Roffe is going to be directing this.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. What has he done? Well, he's done a bunch of documentaries. Huge surprise. Let's see, True Life, Lost for Life, TV series, documentary called Active Shooter: America Under Fire.
Mm-hmm.
Already did one episode of that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a bunch of shorts and documentaries and such. So,
yeah. So, finally, our last story for the night. Amazon, as we now know, they've struck a deal to create their own series based on The Lord of the Rings. It's expected to make it the most expensive, like, series ever. I'm guessing they're doing this with the Tolkien Estate.
Yep, it's a deal they made with the Tolkien Estate. $250 million.
Mm-hmm.
And the requirements are pretty big.
Yeah, go ahead and go through
Five-season commitment.
All right.
That's a lot to commit to right away.
Yeah. Well, I mean, when you've got, like, all of that material already made for you.
Yeah.
Wouldn't necessarily be that difficult. But, yeah. But of course, Jeff Bezos can't afford it, so.
Yeah. Yeah, so this is a deal with the Tolkien Estate, publisher HarperCollins, and New Line Cinema.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so Amazon must be in production within 2 years, according to the terms of the deal.
Mm-hmm.
So when production expenses like casting, producers, and visual effects are factored in, it's expected for this series to cost over $1 billion to produce.
Mm-hmm.
That's to produce.
Yes.
Yeah, to produce. Not to direct or any of the other stuff. That's going to be...
Yeah, that's all included, but...
Yeah.
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 Before it actually gets out to the people, it'll be $1 billion down for it.
Yeah. So do we know how much... Yeah, so do we know, like, how much creative leeway they're going to let Amazon have?
It's actually a lot, because this is supposed to be set between The Hobbit and the Lord of the Rings movies, so there's a lot of stuff there that they could, you know, explore. It's not going to be a retelling of Lord of the Rings or a retelling of The Hobbit. It's going to be something new.
All right. God, then that means they could totally Game of Thrones this shit.
Yeah, with the budget that they're throwing at it? Yeah, I think that's exactly what they're going to do.
Naked Hobbits for everybody!
Yeah, I'm sure enough they could just easily roll into the Lord of the Rings stuff.
Yeah.
And say, do flashbacks to the Hobbits as well.
Yeah. Hey, short girls need love too. All right. But yeah, so yeah, I'm legitimately excited. Is Peter Jackson going to be involved, or is he completely out of it?
I don't think it's been decided yet.
Yeah.
They mentioned as for whether Jackson is involved in the TV series as an executive producer, remains to be seen, would be up to him.
Yeah. So I mean, after The Hobbit, I wouldn't be surprised if he's just completely fucking sick of it.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. A TV series might actually be a better format for Peter Jackson.
It's possible.
Yeah, I wouldn't have to sit here and try and stretch like The Hobbit out into three movies.
Yeah.
Or fits the Lord of the Rings trilogy into one movie for each.
Yeah, so.
Yeah. All right, well, we got a show, folks.
Yes.
So I would like to remind our listeners, if you've got a question to ask, something you want us to read on the air, or just have a critique or comment, you can write into us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. We got it linked in the show notes. Also, on top of iTunes, you can subscribe to our little recorded shenanigans from Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, Google Play, archive.org, RSS, and everywhere where lovingly crafted oral chocolate like ours is produced. So, for that, I have been your host with the most, Brandon Perkins, and for Felipe D'Onofo, Patrick Mifflin, and Chris Logie, I'd like to say good night, get some sleep out there, all power to the teachers.